Listen up, football fans. You won't want to miss this.
Right now, new Bet365 customers bet $5 and get $150 in bonus bets, win or lose. So you could turn that $150 into something bigger when you bet on moneyline, spread, totals, player props.
$150 in bonus bets when new customers bet $5. I know where I'm going to bet from now on. Download the app today and see why it's never ordinary at Bet365. Gambling problem? Call 1-800-GAMBLER. 21 plus only. Must be physically located in Ohio. T&Cs apply. In-app only.
You know how in football, timing is everything? You miss your window by a second and the play's already gone. The holidays are the same way. Everything happens fast, and if you're not ready, you're scrambling at the last minute. That's why Amazon Prime is the real MVP this season.
With Prime's fast, free shipping, you can make those last-minute calls look effortless. Forgot your secret Santa gift? Need something for that office party? Prime's got your back, helping you go from uh-oh to all set faster than a two-minute drill.
Absolutely, Mark, because Prime isn't just about getting things fast. It's about making sure you never miss your shot. It turns that last-minute scramble into a smooth holiday win. So this season, remember, Prime's fast delivery has your back during the holidays, especially when it's down to the wire and can't wait another minute. Last-minute gifts delivered. It's on Prime. Visit Amazon.com/Prime to shop now.
This holiday season, choose gifts that feel thoughtful and practical with Omaha Steaks. Whether you're hosting or gifting, they deliver the world's best steak experience, and it makes you look like you planned way ahead. They've got USDA-certified tender steaks, juicy burgers, comfort meals, and tons more. Gifting Omaha Steaks is honestly one of the easiest wins. Everything arrives beautifully packaged, super convenient, and the quality is unbelievable. Their filet mignons are some of the most tender I've ever had, and the variety means you can personalize every gift. Plus, orders placed by 6 p.m. Eastern ship same day, and everything is backed by their 100% guarantee. It's holiday gifting made simple. Save big on gourmet gifts and more holiday favorites with Omaha Steaks. Visit omahasteaks.com for 50% off site-wide during their Sizzle All The Way sale. And for an extra $35 off, use promo code T-Bone at checkout. Terms apply. See site for details. That's omahasteaks.com, code T-Bone.
KYW News Radio Original Podcasts.
It's just a good conversation with somebody that you didn't know you were interested in. I'm Matt Leon, and this is One on One.
Even the weekends, it's been 40 degrees or it's been pouring rain or anything like that. Yeah, you kind of grumble when you get home, but all in all, you just really enjoy that kind of atmosphere, that kind of setting. It's just the whole point of the Penn Relays. You know, people come back every year to the Penn Relays and sit in the same seats.
And our guest this week, sports writer extraordinaire from the Philadelphia Inquirer, Joe Giuliano. Joe, thanks so much for taking the time.
Hey, man, thanks for the invitation. I'm flattered.
So let's talk a little bit about what life is like for you these days. How much, since the pandemic started, have you been able to cover stuff in person? And how much have you, had to rely on Zoom and watching stuff on TV and doing it that way?
Well, things got better. We got into the summer, and it looked like there was going to be football, and then it looked like there wasn't going to be football, so in the Big Ten, so that was kind of nerve-wracking. But starting with September, Big Ten offered to start football again, and Penn State, which is my college football beat, was active. I covered five games in person at Beaver Stadium, but I did not attend any of the road games. And now my winter beat is Villanova basketball, and I've covered one game in person, the January 19th game against Seton Hall, which, if people recall, was the first game after the 27-day pause, double pause, after Jay Wright, and then two players tested positive. But I have not done any basketball away games, and I think my second home game will be Georgetown on Sunday. So that's really where I've been at. But as you said, I've been covering stuff off the TV, doing interviews off of Zoom, using the internet, covering different teams, filling in on LaSalle, St. Joe, and Drexel when I can. So it's been interesting, but it's still been busy, which we like busy. You know, people were criticizing sports writers back in the summer, saying when sports writers would say, oh, we really don't think they should be playing football because of the pandemic. And people would say, oh, you just don't want to work. You guys are just lazy bums. Well, no, we really didn't want kids to get sick, but this is our job. I mean, we like getting paid. When the pandemic started, they said, well, Joe, you're not going to be working sports for a while. We want you to do obituaries of people who have passed away from COVID. And I said, well, I don't think that's a real, that's really in my comfort zone. But as I got into it, it turned out to be a very rewarding beat for, I think I did it for close to three and a half, 4 months. And it worked out fine. I felt badly for the people, but it's great how family members are eager to talk about their loved ones who are deceased. And that really made it a kind of a about as uplifting an assignment as you could get.
How much, from the sports writing standpoint, do you feel like you lose anything when you can't, when you're not at the game, when you're trying to do it over Zoom, when you're doing it on TV? Do you feel you lose a lot, or have you found ways to, obviously you found ways to deal, but found ways to compensate?
Yeah, well, you do miss the personal touch. There were some schools that still let you in the locker room, much fewer as time has gone on. But, you know, you like the ability to talk to someone one-on-one, which does not happen over Zoom. It's just that the person in charge, the sports information director, in my case with college games, will say, well, we're going to have the coach and then this player and this player. And I think if you asked, you probably could get it in a pinch, but a lot of times with the Zoom, we're working on deadline. In a case of, say, teams playing away games, like if you cover like LaSalle or St. Joe or Drexel, an away game over the internet or off of NBCSN or CBSSN, you have to wait for the coach to call. And sometimes that takes a little longer than you like. But, you know, all in all, yeah, you adapt. You have to. And you try to give... You try to make it as good as you can. The thing that I like too sometimes is if you're watching a game on the internet, whether it's ESPN Plus for LaSalle and St. Joe, or Flow Hoops for Drexel, a lot of times the box score that you see is like a minute or a minute and a half ahead of the actual picture on the screen, and you're like, oh, they went ahead there, like, and then all of a sudden you'll see it like a minute later, but. I kind of play a game with myself. It's kind of goofy, but like I said, you get through it and you move on to the next one.
Are there things that you've learned or tools that have developed specifically like Zoom? Do you think when we will get through this pandemic one day and when it's over that you will still use that will kind of accentuate your ability to cover things?
Yeah, you can see it that way. You know, Zoom is easy for everybody, really. I mean, the coaches just go into another office and they get on Zoom, or you or I get on Zoom, you know, in our homes. You know, it certainly cuts down on travel. You know, the Inquirer, since this all started, other than, you know, major events like the campaign and the demonstrations during the summer and things of that nature, yeah, you have to be at those places. But, you know, for sports, it's like we really haven't traveled a lot. You know, Villanova has a game later this month at Creighton, and I really like going to Omaha, but it doesn't really make any sense to, you know, make that trip or to ask the boss, hey, can I make that trip? It's, you know, it works out much better this way, you know, and of course, with the pandemic still with us, you know, getting on a plane is not my idea of a smart move at this time. But yeah, once we get through this and get things a little more back to normal, I think we'll just pretty much stay on the course that we're on now. Maybe cover more games in person, but not, you know, we'll still have Zoom instead of like personal visits and things like that.
So let's talk a little bit about your career. Was writing always the goal growing up? Was this, did you always want to be a sports writer or always want to be a newspaper writer?
I think when I grew up, Matt, I think sportscaster was a little in front of sports writer, because when I was in high school, we had one pair of binoculars for the four or five of us who were at the game. And when I got the binoculars, I would just do a commentary on the game. And somebody said, hey, Joe, you should be a sportscaster. Well, you know, I thought about it. I said, that looks like a really cool job. So when I got to my first week or two at Temple University, they had a meeting for the Temple News staff and a meeting for the kids who wanted to join WRTI. And when that happened, it was like, the line for WRTI was down the hall, out the door, outside to the dorm. That's how long the line was for people who were interested in working at WRTI. And I said, well, as much as I want to do this, there's probably very few sportscasting jobs because it's a, you know, it's not, it's a It was a strictly jazz station at the time, and they covered live sports, and that was pretty much it. So I went over to the Temple News offices, and the line was a lot shorter, and I got to meet some really good people on the first day. And I said, you know what, this looks like the place for me. And I've been very fortunate. I mean, I learned a lot at Temple, you know, majoring in journalism there. They have a great J school, and from then on, it was just, you know, a love affair with the job.
Did you feel like you were good right away? You enjoy it, but did you feel like you were good right away?
Oh, man, that was awful. I remember the first job I had out of Temple was I was interning at United Press International in Trenton. And, I put in all the tools that I learned at Temple, and they were helpful, don't get me wrong, but there was so much more I had to learn. It was brutal. You know, I survived there. And even though my internship ended, they said, well, you know, we'll keep you keep your name on file, and we'll call you if we have any openings. I'm like, yeah, right. I mean, so, but 2 months later, they called me back, gave me a full-time job, and that started the career.
So what were you doing out of the gate there when you got that first full-time job?
Well, the first full-time job was a lot of news writing, mostly the night shift in Miami. I worked at the Miami Bureau of UPI for 14 months, and it was mostly a night shift stuff, 4:30 to 1. But yeah, doing a lot of news, hardly doing any sports. The only sports I did at UPI Miami was University of Miami football, and back then they were terrible. They were 2-9 the year I covered them. And I was the backup on the Dolphins. We had a veteran writer, who covered the Dolphins as kind of a beat. He couldn't go to every practice because we had to do mostly news. But I was the quote runner and the sidebar guy for the Dolphins. And then I remember one assignment where I was sent to Joe Namath's nightclub in Fort Lauderdale, Florida, when it looked like he was going to go to the USFL, not the USFL, the WFL. Remember the WFL?
Yep.
This was in 1975, 76, and Namath had a press conference at his club and to announce that I was staying in the NFL, I am not going to the WFL. So it was quite an event, though. I mean, there were everybody, like there might have been like 5% media and 95% hangers-on, celebrities and things of that nature, and free drinks for the media, which taught me a lesson early on that you don't drink at work.
As a, 22, 23-year-old, though, first full-time job, Miami, Florida, there are worse places you could end up for a first full-time job.
That's what my mother kept saying. I said, no, I want to work in Philadelphia. She said, oh, no, Miami. What's wrong with Miami? I was like, well, nothing, really. But, yeah, it was fun. It was very educational. And the people we had in Miami were very experienced. When you go to work in Miami, you don't leave. You know, you just stay. I mean, there were guys who worked there for 15, 20, 25, 30 years. So I learned a lot. I was very lucky that, I got to know how to do news because you're stuck. I mean, you're not like a sports writer. You're everything. You have to be everything. You have to be the weather guy. You have to chart hurricanes. That was a thing about working in Miami. You had a big map, and if there was a hurricane coming, you would just circle the longitude and latitude every time there was a statement to kind of get the track and get an idea when you had to write these stories. So, yeah, there was plenty to learn. And then finally, after 14 months, which was not a lot of time, but I had some Temple people at UPI in Philadelphia. And I told them, I said, hey, if there's an opening that springs up, let me know. So they did, and I left, and the boss in Miami was not very happy, but I got to work in Philadelphia. And when I got in Philadelphia, which was in 76, March of 76, I worked news, but a little more sports as we went along year by year by year. And then by 1979, I guess, they made me a full-time sports writer. So that was the start of a really good run, because I got to do all the professional teams, all the home games, not many road games. Got to do Penn State, the home games, not any road games. But it was the start of something really cool. And then I worked at UPI in Philly till 1985, and then In 1984, there were two political conventions and two Olympics. And at the end of the last convention, UPI came out and said, we're going broke. We're going to, you're all going to have to take pay cuts. We're going to have massive layoffs. So don't, you know, like, don't make any plans, you know, that kind of thing. So I managed to hang on. But in the meantime, I went to the Daily News and the Inquirer to see if they had any openings. And after a while, the Inquirer was kind enough to bring me aboard in May of 1985. And so that's 36 in May. But that's been the story of the career path. There has been no movement since then. Thank God.
How was life different? Was there much different from day to day working for a wire service to going to working for a newspaper? Was the job basically the same, or were there some things that were specific to a wire service that you, when you go to the Inky, you don't have to worry about anymore?
Yeah. Well, the thing that the wire service teaches you more than anything is you got to write fast. You know, it's got to be fast. It's got to be right. And you can't take time out. I mean, when a story happens in the wire service, you write it right away. And then you fill it in as you go along. You know, more calls, another story, more calls, another story. But you have to keep it going. And that's really what was a big benefit to me when I got to the Inquirer. Of course, being an AM paper, you know, you're writing a lot on deadline. And I don't know how to say this. I don't think I'm the greatest writer in the world. But I think my writing on deadline skills are pretty good, and they've really put me in good stead. You know, because when the editor sees that, you know, like Villanova has a 9 o'clock game tonight. We're taping this on Wednesday, February 3rd. Villanova's a 9 o'clock game tonight, and people know that, you know, we're past deadline by that time. We're just writing for online, but you know, anytime you're up against it, you know, I think people know that. If I'm writing it, and we have a lot of paper guys at the paper, a lot of employees at the paper who can do that. I mean, I'm not the only one, but I think they know that they're going to get a good story quickly. Excuse me.
So when you come to the Inquirer, the Daily News, or you come to the Inquirer, are you overwhelmed at all? I mean, Philadelphia Inquirer, you're talking about a staple American newspaper. Now, obviously, you know, you've got good experience at this point, but what was it like coming on board?
Well, I don't know if your viewers know who Ralph Cramden is, but when I got there, I was just like, I was just in awe. I mean, back in those days, the Inquirer was winning Pulitzers on a regular basis. You know, Gene Roberts, Gene Foreman, Jim Naughton. I mean, these were like all stars. And I'm like, just kind of like trying not to stub my toe, you know, not trying to do anything bad. Just, you know, really trying to show that, you know, maybe I'm not on the level of these people, but I'm certainly going to do the job and I'm not going to embarrass anybody. I looked at myself, really, when I joined the Inquirer, they hired me to be the night rewrite guy. So I worked every day from like 4 to 12:30. I considered myself the utility infielder of the staff. I mean, I would write the... I would take wire stories and rewrite them for space. We did a Sports People column back then. There were roundups, Sports in Brief. Those were my jobs. And if there was on any occasion that they needed somebody to go out to a football game or to help out somewhere else, you know, I was there for it. But yeah, that was just really, I'm still in awe of the people who work at our newspaper. I mean, I'm older than most of them. And it's just a fabulous experience to watch these people work, especially this year. I mean, during the pandemic, during everything that happened after George Floyd's murder, it's just been and the political situation, the convention, and of course the events that led up to the insurrection at the Capitol. These people are magnificent writers. They go the extra mile. They work long hours. They're out there just, you know, doing everything they can to make our product as good as it can be. And that just, you know, I'm still honored to work there after all these years.
How much, because this is something, like when I look at where I am in my career, you don't realize it, but like my early jobs where I had to, I was introing records and I was covering local municipalities and stuff like that, and high school football and all these things, they really helped make me into the broadcaster I am today. But you don't realize it at the time. You're just trying to get through the day and you're just, you know. How much did you realize at the time the vast different types of things between the wire service, your early days at the Inky, you mentioned you're rewriting, you're doing a little news early on, you're doing sport. Did you realize the breadth of experience and the tools it was giving your toolbox at the time? Or is it something you look back on at a certain point, you're like, wow, look at that, really all helped get me where I am today?
Yeah, it's kind of a mix of both, actually. There were, you know, I've always been very proud of my time at the wire service, and we don't, there's not many of us left. UPI closed quite a while ago. We still have a couple of guys at the Inquirer who used to work at UPI, including Tony Wood, my Philadelphia buddy, who was one of the co-conspirators to get me to Philadelphia in the first place. But yeah, it was just a valuable bit of experience. And then as I've gone along at the Inquirer, like even those days on the rewrite desk, you know, those really prepared me for the, it just got your work used to the amount of work you had to do and the things you had to get to achieve, like, you know, a victory on that day, you know, like, oh, I got this story. This was a great story. That was pretty good. I remember doing a story about Larry Boa when you know, he had gotten traded to the Cubs, and then the Cubs didn't want him anymore. And, I got a number for Larry Boa, and I called him up, and he answered, and we did a really nice interview about, yeah, I'd love to come back to Philadelphia. And the bosses were really like, wow, you know, Joe went that extra mile. And that's the thing. If you're at a newspaper like the Inquirer, like, going the extra mile is required. Back then, I don't really know if I was going the extra mile, but this proved to me that it's something that I needed to do, and it will be, you know, it will be like an important part of the newspaper experience. But yeah, and after that, you know, working, you know, regular beats, you know, mostly in college sports, whether it be football or basketball, you know, covering the Big Five as a unit rather than as, you know, an individual team. Yeah, there were a lot of neat things that my experience was a big help to me in, you know, tackling these, you know, additional challenges and beats it's been, you know, very rewarding. I really feel that.
You mentioned that Boa story, and you talked about how early on you were kind of in awe being at the Inquirer. Do you remember a story, a moment where you really started to feel like, I don't know, like you belonged, like, I can do this at this level and I'm going to be okay?
I just think the reaction I got, like, just filling in on things that were needed, whether it be rewrite, like, these were the early years. The fact that I, like you said, you're so kind to say that I had these tools in my toolbox, was a real benefit. After, like, a series of things, I was like, yeah, this is really, like, very cool. I mean, this is something that I can do, and, you know, I can be good at it, you know, and... yeah, that was really nice. I'm thinking of things that I might have done that told me I could do this, and nothing's really coming to mind right now. Like, we had like this massive coverage when Pelle Lindbergh was killed in the automobile accident, and it was like all hands on deck. I mean, there was nobody, you know, you couldn't hide out anywhere. It was like you were part of the team, and you know, that was really an interesting experience, kind of an emotional experience, really, because, you know, we're covering sports, fun and games, isn't it great? And then all of a sudden this major tragedy happens. A young man gets cut down in the prime of life, his prime of his career. And it was just really it was just a lot of go, 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 just work, come up with new angles. You know, we all did. And yeah, that was something that I remembered pretty clearly. The other thing I remember too is, as we go along in life, Joe Carter's home run in the that won Toronto the World Series in 1993. They said, "All right, Joe, you're doing Carter. How much time do I have? 25 minutes. Oh, okay." Went downstairs, got Carter. Thank God we got Carter instead of joining the locker room celebration and all the champagne. They brought Carter into a little back room where like five people had like access to him right away. And so we scribbled down stuff and I went upstairs and I wrote it. And it was just like, I don't know, not to pin any roses on my own lapel, but it was magical. I mean, it was just the fact that I wrote a coherent story in that short of a time on the World Series hero was, I was kind of proud of that one.
Time for a break on One-on-One. We will have more with the Philadelphia Inquirer's Joe Giuliano right after this. And we are back on One-on-One. Our guest this week, Philadelphia Inquirer sports writer Joe Giuliano. What is the key as a beat writer? If you're talking to a young reporter who is taking over a beat, regardless of what sport, you know, what level, what is the key to doing it well? I mean, obviously be a good writer and stuff like that, but I think beats are something special that require a real human touch to do them well.
Yeah. Well, preparation is like always number one. I mean, if you're going into a new beat, you have to really know everything you need to know about a beat, whether it's the coach, the players, the schedules, get to know whether it's a college or pro beat, get to know the sports info director or know your the public relations person for the pro team, ask around, some of the older writers will help you along a little bit, just try to find tips wherever you can. Of course, sourcing is always a big thing. Try to get to know people associated with the team and kind of see if they can, maybe give you a hand every once in a while. It's not an easy job, but it's something you really have to work at. And don't be afraid to work. Don't be afraid to work on your days off. I know there are some people that don't like working 7 days a week, but sometimes it's what it takes to get the beat down, get it right, and just be kind of a reliable source of information for the readers. I mean, that's the thing. You're working for the readers. You're not working for yourself. You're working for the readers. You're asking questions of coaches and managers and things like that because the people want to know. You have to inform those people that what's happening with these teams. So yeah, that's a long-winded answer to that, Matt. But it's very important. Preparation, concentration, focus. And working for the reader. That's pretty much all of it.
I don't want you to throw anybody under the bus per se here, but in all your years of working multiple beats, are there any people you've covered that have made working that beat incredibly difficult, or to the other end of the spectrum, really helped make the coverage all it could be?
Well, that's a good one. I always think of the tale of like Rolly Massimino. I mean, when Rolly liked you, he really liked you. And when he didn't like you, he would bark at you quite a bit. I mean, all in all, he was a good guy. Don't get me wrong. And I think in the early, when he saw my last name, he said, there we go. But you deal with all these guys. I have never worked with anyone who's been like just miserable all the time or, there are times when, like I remember, I didn't cover the Phillies when Jim Fregosi managed them, but I did enough playoff games. I did the World Series that year, 93. And there would be times where he'd get a question from somebody and he'd just stare at him and go, oh, yeah, right. You didn't play the game, did you? Like, oh, well, I played. Sure, I played. I understand baseball, but not these really hidden strategies of these professional managers or anything like that. But there was no, I'm trying to remember where I was with my, oh, but I was just thinking that, there really was no coach that made my day miserable. Like Joe Paterno say, like I started covering Penn State football in 1976 for UPI and met Joe Paterno and he was very nice, very gracious, welcoming me to the beat. And he was a hard guy to deal with sometimes if he didn't want to answer a question or, he thought that you were, trying to slip him a fast one, But the funny thing about Paterno was I covered Penn State football every year from 76 to 84, left UPI in 85, went 25 years without covering a Penn State game. And then 2009, I got the beat for the Inquirer, and Joe Paterno was still the coach. So I think he was like getting reconnaissance from people like, do I know that guy? I think I've seen him before. Like, and said, Joe, I know you all. Yeah, right. But still, you know, it was interesting that, you know, we were 25 years, I was 25 years away from the beat when I got to cover Paterno again. And that was pretty funny. And then, of course, doing Villanova, I've done Villanova probably 15 years, I guess. And Jay Wright's been the coach there for 20. So, you know, he's always been a real good guy to deal with. In fact, I got so many comments from writers at the 2016 Final Four, you know, because Jay would be doing interview after interview, and people would walk up to me and go, Joe, is he always like this? And I go, well, yeah. Wow. You have it so good. Well, I guess as coaches, go, yeah, it's been a pretty cool experience.
What would you say? And you talked, you know, you mentioned that Bo will call. If you had to put one scoop, one story at the top of the list of your career, is there one that just jumps out that we would put at the top of that list, and why?
I covered the Sixers for 4 years at the time of Allen Iverson, and my competition was Phil Jasner of the Daily News, who was the best NBA writer of them all. I mean, incredibly sourced. I get to the point where I'd wake up in the morning and I'd go to the paper to see if Phil had like Iverson being traded. You know, I was like, oh God, no, I didn't want that to happen. But when he did get traded, you know, it was interesting. I didn't beat him on anything, but I thought my work was, you know, good, maybe not as good as his, but just almost as good. I mean, I don't want to, you know, say that I'm better than him because I wasn't, but it was really like a circus around the time that he was going to get traded. Maybe he's getting traded. Ed Snyder wants him traded. No, he doesn't. But finally, when he was traded, I mean, I think I stepped up to the plate, you know, that kind of thing, because the competition was brutal. And so I kind of appreciated the fact that, you know, that I kind of held up under all that. But yeah, that was that those were like pretty incredible days. But those are ones that really stick out nicely. I'm sure after I finish this call with you, I'm going to think of like 10 things. But that's the one that like popped into my head. So we'll go with that for now.
Do you have a favorite sport event to cover because of just your enjoyment of the sports, maybe the experience, the people you deal with? Is there one that's at the top of the list? Because that's, even now, you have a very vast, you mentioned Villanova, Penn State, but I know you do golf, you do the relays, like, and all the things you've done in your past. Is there one that you really enjoy the most?
Yeah, I got to go with the Penn relays on that. I look forward to it every year, and it's just a lot of work. And you know what? So what? It's just so much fun. I felt so bad when it got canceled this year, this past year. And then Dave Johnson left, which is, you know, always my go-to guy. But I've covered the Penn Relays every year since 1976, and I have just had a ball every year. It's never been work. Even the weekends, it's been 40 degrees or it's been pouring rain or anything like that. Yeah, you kind of grumble when you get home, but all in all, you just really enjoy that kind of atmosphere, that kind of setting, just the whole point of the Penn Relays. You know, people come back every year to the Penn Relays and sit in the same seats and talk about like the old times and appreciate the new times, and it's just a wonderful, wonderful experience. I always said, like, you know, when I retire, and I hope the Enquirer will let me retire and not the other thing, you know, I will, you know, I'm hoping to end my career at the Penn Relays, because that's just like the best. And I have enjoyed it so much.
We talk about the vast experience and stuff like that. Do you feel your style as a writer has changed from your early days at UPI to now?
Well, UPI, you really had to keep it straight. And even at the Enquirer, you know, sometimes you tried to, like, maybe kind of, you know, humor it or try to spice up your story a little bit, and the editor would look at it and go, well, I don't think so. So, yeah, I yeah, sure, your writing evolves. But I think in all the years I've worked at the Enquirer, I don't think I've ever liked any story I've ever written. Like, you know, there's always one thing you can do to make it better. Sometimes you'll lay in bed and you'll go, oh, I forgot to mention that in the story. You know, right before you go to sleep, you'll think of that. You'll be like, oh, God, I messed that up again. But you know, when you're a writer, you're your own worst critic. One of the big guns at the Enquirer, Jim Naughton, once said, you know, we're all plagued with creative insecurity. And that's true. I mean, the story is never good enough. You know, yeah, you got to send it in. You can't work on it any longer. The time has come. You got to file the story and give it to an editor. But sometimes you'll read it in the paper the next morning and go, oh, God, I should have moved that up. I should have not talked about that so much. I mean, there's always things you can do to just drive yourself crazy. And that's part of my MO, actually, driving myself crazy when it comes to grading my own stories.
Is there a writer you've worked with that you think has had the most influence on your career?
Oh, man, there's so many. Bill Lyon, I think, ranks at the top of the list. Because not only was Bill a great writer, he proved you could be a great writer and be a good guy. You know, there are some egomaniacs in our business, you know, on a national scale, you know, that are sometimes tough to deal with. But Bill was just always so human. I mean, he treated you like, you know, you were an equal. And I was never Bill Lyon's equal. But he was just the best guy to work with, the most considerate. You know, hey, Joe, I'm going to do this. Am I getting in your way, Bill? You never get in my way. Just go for it, and I will write around you. I mean, sometimes, like a columnist thinks, I have to write around the guy who's doing the main lead. And but no, I say, look, you write what you write, and then we'll take it from there. You know, I've always enjoyed the times I was with Bill. I was with Bill at, you know, Final Fours and golf majors and things like that. You know, just. Yeah, Penn State football, a wonderful, wonderful man. I mean, I adore him. I'll never forget him.
What is your favorite part of being a sports writer? Is it the events, the people, that adrenaline of writing on deadline? What would you say is your favorite part?
Well, I always tell people that I became a sports writer. You know, I taught a sports writing course at Temple back in the 90s, and they said, oh, Mr. Giuliano, I want to be a sports writer. I love sports. I said, no, you can't just love sports if you're a sports writer. You got to like the sports, and you got to like the writing. And I think, I mean, it's even for me. I really like the writing. I like chronicling stuff I've seen or people I've interviewed. That's the best part of it. I mean, that's just... That's kind of where the magic happens. You know, like I've said, I'm not a real fan of my writing sometimes, but I really enjoy, you know, covering something, especially a big event. I mean, Villanova's two Final Fours in 2016 and 2018 were like just incredible things to cover. The 2013 U.S. Open at Marion was an incredible event to cover because there's so much preparation that goes into it. By the time the thing actually happens, you're like, let's go. This is like, I've prepared like weeks for this moment. Let's do it. And then you get like a 2016 ending in the Final Four where Chris Jenkins hits the shot at the buzzer. And you're like sitting there going, man, I can't believe I just saw that. And then you look at your watch and you go, you better start writing or you're not going to get in the paper tomorrow. So it's just the magic of stuff you can see. I mean, I've been fortunate enough. I mentioned Chris. I mentioned Joe Carter's homer, Christian Laettner's shot in 92 at the Spectrum. I mean, I've covered three of the greatest endings in sports history. And, you know, and to be able to have gotten that on paper or on a computer screen and write it up, and, you know, it's just like fantastic. My first Masters in 1986 was won by Jack Nicklaus. Jack Nicklaus, my first major for the Enquirer. And I'm thinking, if I don't write a good story about Jack Nicklaus winning the Masters at age 46, then I'm never going to cover another major tournament again. And I got lucky. I wrote a story that everybody loved. And I've been covering majors. I think I've covered 60, 70 majors since then. So it's just incredible. Like the things that you see, but just writing them really is the tonic that you know, makes me just really love this career.
Is there an event you have never covered that you would like to? I mean, within the realm of possibility, is there anything that's just never come across your plate that you would still love the opportunity to do before you hang it up?
You know, other than a Springsteen concert? actually, the World Cup. I've been fortunate enough to cover two Olympics track in LA in 84 and all kinds of winter sports I didn't understand first before I got there in Salt Lake City in 02. But the World Cup, I think, is something that I would really like to, you know, I'd like to be a part of that in some way. But yeah, that's really the only thing I've covered. World Series, I covered one Super Bowl. When I worked in Miami, I covered Super Bowl 10, and I was like the seventh man on a six-man rotation. I just pretty much got quotes and fed them to people. I think I wrote one story that was just terrible. But I covered the Phillies in 80, 81, 83, 93, and 08. Yeah, it's been that's been great. I covered the Sixers winning it all in 83. The Flyers, I didn't cover either of the first actually, Flyers haven't won a Stanley Cup since 75, right? So, yeah.
Indeed.
I wasn't even around. yeah, that's it. I didn't really have anything to do with the Eagles Super Bowl win, but yeah, it's there's just been a lot of things that I've been fortunate to cover that have been really just great memories.
The last, I would say, 10, 15 years have been difficult for newspapers for multiple reasons, the internet exploding, stuff like that. How difficult has it been for you just being in the middle of that? I'm sure there's a lot of tension. There's a lot of uncertainty at times. And how difficult overall has it been the last decade or so in the newspaper business?
Well, when you think about it, you get sad, really. I mean, have shrunken in space available to us. You know, people don't subscribe to newspapers as much as they do, although I don't think I've talked to anyone who's 50 or over who says, oh, yeah, I just love that digital. No, they all tell me, I love having that newspaper in my hand in the morning. I mean, I love hearing that stuff. You know, circulation going down, you know, that's kind of sad. The deadlines are getting earlier and earlier. In fact, since the pandemic, those of us in sports, I think I can speak for all of our people in sports. We're just like incensed that the deadlines are so early. Like if the game starts after 7 o'clock, you don't get it in the first edition, which is just, you know, we're kind of embarrassed. You know, we're supposed to serve the reader, and they don't get if the game starts at 7:30, it doesn't get in the first edition. So that's kind of a pet peeve of all of us. But yeah, it's certainly hasn't helped, but you know, you kind of press on and you, you know, adapt to any digital stuff that they want you to do. It's not my wheelhouse, but it's something that I have learned over the years, you know, just enough to get by, and we'll see how it goes from there. But yeah, it's disappointing. I mean, you know, if you've been in the business, I mean, when you go back to when I started, you know, UPI in 75, and then starting at the Inquirer in 85, I mean, the Inquirer was like the you know, the gold standard for newspapers back then. And you kind of miss that. But, you know, you just kind of go on and get the enjoyment, which I still do, of you know, getting out, covering events and writing about them, you know, writing about people and just enjoying myself best I can.
Do you think a 21, 22-year-old Joe Giuliano getting out of Temple would still get into the journalism business today in the current environment?
In the current environment? Well, I'd probably be smarter digitally when I was 22 in the current environment. You know what, Matt? I tell people, like, I wouldn't know what else to do. I mean, I've been doing this for so long. I mean, I can barely change a tire. I mean, you know, I can't cook. So this is it. You know, like If you see me on the street in the next few months, I'll be like, well, let me see what I can do, because I really don't know how to do anything else but this. And I've really enjoyed this. I mean, I've really had no reason during my whole career to say, you know what, this really stinks. I got to try something else. And so many people have done it, and so many people have succeeded. Don't get me wrong. I mean, there are people who are very adaptable, and that's great. But me, I'm just, we like to call ourselves ink-stained wretches, and that's what we are, and that's what we'll be.
Joe Giuliano, thanks so much for taking the time.
My pleasure, Matt. Thanks for having me.
And that will do it for this week's episode. Want to thank Joe Giuliano, sports writer for the Philadelphia Inquirer, for being our guest. Now, if you like this show and you want to help us out and you listen on Apple Podcasts, please leave us a rating and a review. Now, you can follow the show on Twitter at OneOnOnePod, and you can follow me on Twitter as well at MattLeon1060. Thanks so much for listening, and join us again next week when we will have another conversation with someone you should know more about.
Listen up, football fans. You won't want to miss this.
Right now, new Bet365 customers bet $5 and get $150 in bonus bets, win or lose. So you could turn that $150 into something bigger when you bet on Moneyline, Spread, Totals, Player Props.
$150 in bonus bets when new customers bet $5. I know where I'm going to bet from now on. Download the app today and see why it's never ordinary at Bet365. Gambling problem? Call 1-800-GAMBLER. 21 plus only. Must be physically located in Ohio. T&Cs apply. In app only.
You know how in football, timing is everything? You miss your window by a second and the play's already gone. The holidays are the same way. Everything happens fast, and if you're not ready, you're scrambling at the last minute. That's why Amazon Prime is the real MVP this season.
With Prime's fast, free shipping, you can make those last-minute calls look effortless. Forgot your secret Santa gift? Need something for that office party? Prime's got your back, helping you go from uh-oh to all set faster than a two-minute drill.
Absolutely, Mark, because Prime isn't just about getting things fast. It's about making sure you never miss your shot. It turns that last-minute scramble into a smooth holiday win. So this season, remember, Prime's fast delivery has your back during the holidays, especially when it's down to the wire and can't wait another minute. Last-minute gifts delivered, it's on Prime. Visit Amazon.com/Prime to shop now.
This holiday season, choose gifts that feel thoughtful and practical with Omaha Steaks. Whether you're hosting or gifting, they deliver the world's best steak experience, and it makes you look like you planned way ahead. They've got USDA-certified tender steaks, juicy burgers, comfort meals, and tons more. Gifting Omaha Steaks is honestly one of the easiest wins. Everything arrives beautifully packaged, super convenient, and the quality is unbelievable. Their filet mignons are some of the most tender I've ever had, and the variety means you can personalize every gift. Plus, orders placed by 6 p.m. Eastern ship same day, and everything is backed by their 100% guarantee. It's holiday gifting made simple. Save big on gourmet gifts and more holiday favorites with Omaha Steaks. Visit omahasteaks.com for 50% off site-wide during their Sizzle All The Way sale. And for an extra $35 off, use promo code T-Bone at checkout. Terms apply. See site for details. That's omahasteaks.com, code T-Bone.
This episode is brought to you by Progressive. Most of you aren't just listening right now. You're driving, cleaning, and even exercising. But what if you could be saving money by switching to Progressive? Drivers who save by switching save nearly $750 on average. And auto customers qualify for an average of 7 discounts. Multitask right now. Quote today at Progressive.com. Progressive Casualty Insurance Company and Affiliates. National average 12-month savings of $744 by new customers surveyed who saved with Progressive between June 2022 and May 2023. Potential savings will vary. Discounts not available in all states and situations.
In a world of endless notifications, there could be an important one you're missing. Your kidneys may be signaling an SOS. With high blood pressure or type 2 diabetes, your kidneys could be warning you of early signs of damage, which may put you at higher risk for events like heart attack or stroke. But there's a simple test that can help spot a hidden signal. Ask your doctor about a urine test called UACR to help detect kidney disease and heart risk early. To learn more, visit detecttheSOS.com today.